Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to introduce our guest for the day, Andrew Leadham. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you too. So everyone, Andrew is a self-storage investor, and he's a former structural engineer, and just really excited to hear his story today and dive into an asset class that, as you all know, I'm a big fan of from an investment perspective. So Andrew, why don't you start us off by sharing a bit about your background and, you know, why you decided to leave your career as an engineer and set out into commercial real estate?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I'm married. I'm husband and father of four kids. And that was started off as a structural engineer. I got my master's in structural engineering and practiced that for 12 years. Got to work on some really neat projects, designing bridges and waterfront structures and doing some inspection work. But ultimately, you know, my wife and I, the path that I was on wasn't really leading to where we wanted to go as far as particularly with our family and what we wanted as far as time with our kids and things like that. And
really quick,
so
Andrew,
we decided to,
just dive into that a bit. So was it mostly about, you know, time, or was it also financial? Can you just give me a little bit of more idea about that?
Yeah, I think that it was both. I think time is obviously the biggest thing. But yeah, as I kind of climbed the corporate ladder, I really discovered that, you know, the next rung on the ladder, while it came with a financial benefit, really also came with a lot of sacrifices that, you know, just the pressures and anxieties that come with a lot of that, the demands on you. And so yeah, I think the time was probably the biggest thing. But I think as far as the financial goes as well, you know, the real estate side of things, I don't think there's anything like it. I didn't really know anything about real estate prior to probably 2014, 2015. And it was really my daughter that kind of led us down that path. We had started a 529 college account for her when she was born in 2011. And in 2015, it was pretty obvious that strategy was not going to work to fund college.
Yeah.
So that was at the point where I started looking at other alternatives.
And Andrew, I'm just really curious, like, what was not working about that? Because I'm not, you know, I haven't, like, was it something about the time or the method?
Yeah, I think we basically just had a, you know, a standard 529 account with one of the big brokerages. And it was, you know, just with the fees and, you know, the stock market, it was just, you know, okay returns, but it definitely was not going to produce what we were looking for. And so, yeah, that kind of led us to looking at alternatives and, you know, pretty quickly discovered real estate and just the power of that asset, you know, of real estate in general. And, you know, there's a million and one ways to create wealth and build that within real estate. But ultimately, I don't think there's anything like that.
Yeah. So did your daughter come to you and say, I don't think my college fund is growing fast enough? How did that go?
No. No, she was 4 or 5 at the time. So, it was really just, I'm being an engineer, I'm a planner. And so, you know, I'm always looking ahead and tracking, you know, how are we doing and what's the plan today and how have we been doing as far as what we anticipated? And I think just significantly underperforming what I was hoping for when I was started it. You know, a lot of the primary reasons I had started it was tax reasons, you know, just with the 529, but even just the growth of it just wasn't what I was hoping for. And so that was kind of what led us to start looking around. And, you know, at that point, I knew a few friends that were flipping some houses and one or two folks that owned some rentals. And so that kind of got me started, and I found Bigger Pockets and started the, you know, the deluge of podcasts and just soaking up as much as I could online, which it's just insane once you start that rabbit hole.
Well, there wasn't all that much, you know, back when I started learning about real estate in 2000.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, in six or
not like it is now.
Yeah. I mean, now it's just, yeah, there's a mountain, you know, there's a mountain range of podcasts and ways to learn. And yeah, I mean, yeah, I remember checking out this like book from the library, like books from the library, you know, that was like how I learned about apartment investing back in the day.
Yeah.
And it was mind blowing stuff back then, but you didn't have as many stories about. And of course, now there's a lot of books now too. So it has really changed, but there's still so much opportunity. And just back to the 529 plan, I'm just really interested in this because I think a lot of people have 529 plans and, you know, obviously most people have their money in the stock market and this is what, you know, we're told we should do to prepare for college, et cetera. You know, I guess, were you anticipating like whatever you feel comfortable sharing, was it like that you were not invested in good. Yeah, I'm not even sure what you were invested in, but was it like, oh, if I had only been invested in this, and who was choosing that for you and what were the fees like?
Yeah. So I think, yeah, we had some accounts just through Vanguard at some point that we were doing ourselves. And then we moved to a financial advisor and they were with American Funds. And so we transferred some stuff over there. And with that, you know, there's a lot of upfront fees that they charge as well as ongoing, you know, just maintenance fees and things like that, that aren't actually, you know, are kind of on the back end. So it's not necessarily, you know, you kind of have to dig in to see them. But as far as performance, you know, I think that we started with a couple $1,000 and, you know, it put, you know, $1,000 in here and there. And, you know, it was severely, you know, with working with them, it was severely underperforming the market even. And it was like, well, we can definitely do better ourselves. We were doing better ourselves. And so that was, we didn't really stay there very long. I mean, it was a couple years, you know, we wanted to give it a shot, but yeah, I think that we were still kind of getting our financial feet under us and kind of looking for that guidance. But, you know, I think through all that, it really made us realize that, you know, nobody's, I mean, it's the same as, you know, anything. It's the same as property management on real estate. You know, nobody's going to look after and care for your things more than yourself. And if you're just a cog in the system and a number in line, you know, it's, nobody's going to take that responsibility to ensure that you're really maximizing what you can be doing. And I mean, that's part of, you know, the name of my company, Self-Storage Stewardship, that, you know, we're called to be stewards of what we've been given, both financially, but as well as, you know, the gifts that we all have, the abilities that we have, you know, aren't to be squandered. They're to be used and to be maximized. And if you're delegating those tasks to other people, then, you know, you're kind of settling to some degree. And so I think that, you know, through that, you know, we kind of took back the reins of, you know, no, we really need to dig into this and take control over what's happening here.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then, okay. So when you were, as you were taking back the reins, like how did real estate kind of rise to the top above like all the different other types of investments that you could make?
Yeah, I think one, it was just, I think seeing that you're dealing with assets. It's the same reason I moved towards structural engineering as opposed to mechanical or electrical. You know, electrical, mechanical, the HVAC systems, you don't really see things. Whereas structural, you can see a bridge. You can touch and feel it. And in the same way with real estate, you know, it's not just this thing that's, the volatility is going all over the place. And, you know, who knows what's causing it. It's, you know, you have a lot more control over the actual performance of the asset, and as well as just the ability to buy right to, you know, it's my wife and I have always been pretty thrifty. And so just, you know, that looking for a good deal and being able to have buying criteria and finding things and, you know, all of that comes into play and it allows you to really grow in a much more predictable and a quicker timeline as well.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, it's so cool. I feel like engineers are so drawn to real estate because of just exactly what you just described. Like, it's something that, you know, you spend your jobs, you know, figuring out, well, how do we actually make predictions, stay on track, create estimates, and I'm sure I'm not really getting everything there, but in real estate, you know, we are creating a financial model that's not that complicated, and we're able to predict, you know, how something's going to go based on that. So whereas, I find that some other professions like have a harder time wrapping their minds around that, but engineers seem to just really, really get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So great. So that's how real estate kind of rose to the top. Now, how did self-storage kind of rise to the top out of all the other asset classes that you could have considered? And I know you're maybe dabbling in multiple.
Yeah. So back then in 2015, I started with some smaller residential multifamily. So some duplexes, a triplex, and just had those on the side. And then it wasn't until 2020, 2021 that I started looking at the commercial side of things. You know, just looking at reevaluating my residential multifamily portfolio. How is it performing compared to what I had anticipated and where we want to go? And it was doing what I thought it would. You know, we were right on track with everything, but, you know, in thinking through the scaling of it, I still realized that we had a long way to go and it was going to take a long time picking up a duplex here, a triplex here, a quad here, that to get where we were going to go was still going to take a lot of time and a lot of effort. And so that's kind of where I started looking at the commercial side of things to accelerate that process. And that started just with looking at passive investments because, you know, at that point, you know, I definitely thought commercial real estate is way out of my league. You know, that's for those guys. That's not for me. You know, but I did have some connections with some folks that were in the space and had some offerings for LP investors. And so I made some investments on that end. And then it really was at the point where my wife and I kind of sat down and decided that we really wanted to make the commercial real estate thing happen and have that definitive purpose of, you know, we're going to do this, whatever it takes. And at that point, that was kind of where I started evaluating, all right, if I'm going to do this, what do I want to focus on? Because again, within real estate, there's so many ways to succeed. I had already previously looked at, you know, just different things with notes and, you know, other things. But, you know, at that point, I really narrowed it down to multifamily, self-storage, and mobile home parks and evaluated those. And, you know, I like all three of those asset classes. I think there's a lot to like about all of them. Multifamily obviously is, you know, the go-to, and, you know, people are always going to need a place to live. And especially in this environment where there's such a hole we've dug ourselves into when it comes to supply and demand that, you know, we can't build them fast enough to keep up with what we need. And so, you know, there's just a lot to like about the multifamily asset class. But when it came to multifamily, I just thought that it was going to be, especially doing it while I was a full-time engineer, the amount of time and effort it would take to compete in the market. I didn't think that that was something that I would be able to do effectively. And so I did and still continue to invest passively in multifamily. And even with the group that I'm partnering with now, with Community Investment Group, I invest in their multifamily deals. But then, you know, with self-storage and mobile home parks, I really like that asset class. I don't currently have any investments in that, but I really like the asset class. I think that it really serves to meet a need as far as housing goes, you know, with affordable housing. And a lot of the operators out there are doing a great job in really, you know, turning a lot of these around and kind of fighting against that stigma of what mobile home parks are and really providing quality places for people to live at affordable prices. And, but as far as, you know, an asset class for, you know, somebody new getting in, the way that I see it is that there's a set number of mobile home parks in the country, and a lot of municipalities, I'd say a majority of them, have kind of nixed the development of mobile home parks moving forward. And yeah. So the way that I saw that is just, you know, it secures the value of that asset class, but it also means that the competition is just going to be that much more difficult, because as they're being picked up, there's not more and more being created. And so that leads us to self-storage. I love self-storage for a lot of reasons. One, you know, I think all three of these are somewhat recession resistant, but self-storage has performed just outstanding through the past several recessions. You know, when the economy is booming, people are buying things, people need place to put those things that they're buying. But when the recession comes and when there's a downturn, people are downsizing and not necessarily wanting to throw away all that stuff that they fit in a bigger space. And so they're utilizing storage really in all those transition seasons. So whether the market's going up or whether it's coming down, people are utilizing storage. And I think that it's an asset class that is continuing to grow. You know, the market is crazy right now in terms of new facilities being built and developed to keep up with the demand. And the biggest thing of what led me to self-storage is just the makeup of the ownership of the asset class in general. Probably 10 years ago, the market looked like probably about 20% of the market owned by the big guys, you know, the Public Storage, Extra Space, Life Storage, CubeSmart, all of the bigger guys, and probably about 80% owned by the mom and pop or regional players. You know, that dropped to, you know, about 5 years ago, it was the 70% mark. And most recently, I think I've heard it's a little over 50-50 right now. And so, I mean, it's the market's quickly consolidating, but I still think that there's a lot of opportunity for dealing with the mom and pop owners who developed these things in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and are looking to transition out, as well as just the success of self-storage in multiple different markets. You know, a lot of folks that I interact with are successful in those tertiary markets where, you know, populations can be as low as 2,000 people, and they're crushing it with different assets that they've got serving those markets. And then you've got the, you know, the class A, you know, in the primary MSAs where a lot of the REITs play, that are still, you know, there's a lot of room there as well. So there's just a variety of different niches, even within the self-storage space. You've got boat and RV storage with that. So I saw that as something where somebody could really jump in and get started. The barriers of entry aren't quite as high as, at least in my mind, as those other asset classes.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. I mean, I do think that fragmentation of the industry, like you're saying about a lot of mom and pop owners, does create a ton of opportunity. And I appreciate those kind of stats that now it's kind of like more at a 50-50, but there's still a lot of opportunity, right? Because those mom and pops don't want to continue to own, right? And so like they're getting older.
Right. And even, you know, some of the bigger players are moving into those secondary markets, but they're still not touching any of the smaller secondary markets and tertiary markets. So there's still a lot of room for folks to get their foot in the door and get started.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Okay. And I also want to hear about, because you do have a boat and RV project right now, right?
Yeah, that's the project I'm working on with Community Investment Group. We're in the due diligence phase right now, but it's a project where we're going to be converting a 60,000 square foot warehouse to indoor vehicle storage and then developing about 5 acres for boat and RV. We'll do that in phases, but it'll include covered and enclosed as well as open parking in the back. And then the inside will be indoor vehicle.
This for like specialty cars or when people store vehicles?
So yeah, there will be a section that'll be kind of cordoned off for the higher end exotic vehicles, and it'll come, you know, we'll also offer like a membership package for, you know, a club so that people can come hang out and spend time there, as well as have access to be able to walk around kind of the showroom area of it. But we'll also service, you know, just anybody that wants to store a vehicle or store boat and not necessarily be a member of the club. So,
okay. And just a question about that. How would you characterize the, you know, you've given us like an overview of multifamily mobile home parks and self-storage. How would you characterize the boat and RV and vehicle storage space?
Yeah, I would say that the boat and RV space is, I think that it, you know, just like self-storage kind of lagged multifamily and is now, you know, multifamily, as far as the institutional players is, you know, institutional players dominate that space. And so self-storage is quickly moving in that direction. Like I said, it's not quite there yet, but on the financing side, it's there. You know, it's a proven asset class. Banks are much more, they actually like having self-storage on their books because of, you know, because of how well it's performed historically. I would say that boat and RV is still probably about 10 years behind self-storage in that regard. That it's still, it's an up and coming asset class, not quite as proven. And so banks are willing to lend on it, but it's not like self-storage or multifamily where it's just it's a no-brainer. You've got to really deal with somebody who's familiar with the space. You know, it's got a long, long ways to go, even just in terms of, you know, the experts in the field and feasibility studies and things like that. There's very limited numbers of people who are really expert in the field.
Do you think more and more people are going to, like, the demand for boat and RV storage is like on the rise?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, it definitely is. The past 2 years, RV sales have peaked over 600,000 each year, which, you know, 6 years ago, I think it was in the 300,000 to 400,000 range. And, you know, it's just been spiking up since then through COVID. And so as, you know, this increase in sales and, you know, as far as the evaluation of the generational demographics of people buying RVs, you know, it used to be the folks that when they retired, they got an RV. But there's a significant number of people in the 35 to 55 range that are planning to buy an RV in the next 5 years. And there's also a large percentage of people who own RVs who are planning to buy another one. You know, as population increases and, you know, all the valuable land is being bought up for multifamily, for other space use, you know, the boat and RV on a per square footage cost basis isn't going to get you what those development projects are. And so the space to store these things is decreasing as those open spaces are being developed. And you're getting more, you know, more multifamily developments, more HOAs that aren't going to let you store an RV in the neighborhood. And so, you know, you've got sales going up and your space to store going down. And so the demand, there's just, you know, I've been at a few seminars this year and nobody that I've talked to in the space has been able to identify any market in the country that's oversaturated when it comes to boat and RV storage. Mm-hmm. There are markets where it didn't used to be 5 years ago, probably not, but now there are markets in the self-storage industry that are oversaturated that, you know, have people, you know, don't do a feasibility study or just assume it's just still in that build it and they will come mentality and just throw up these self-storage units and, you know, it can oversaturate a market. But when it comes to boat and RV, you know, we're far from that in most every market that I've evaluated.
Very interesting. Well, thanks for that overview. I just, you know, I haven't definitely had some people come on and talk about RV campgrounds, but you're mm-hmm. the first person who's kind of, and I mean, I've seen boat and RV deals, you know, with some of the operators that I invest with, but I didn't actually really think about the space until just now. So thanks for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Really cool. Well, thanks so much, Andrew, for coming on and just sharing, you know, a bit about your journey and from structural engineering into commercial real estate and just talking about the different spaces. I think it's just really valuable to hear, you know, how you have kind of come to this point in your career. Would you now share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share?
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody wants to reach out, my website is selfstoragestewardship.com. They can go there and contact me through that. Andrew@selfstoragestewardship.com is my email. And feel free to reach out. I'm more than happy to talk with anybody and share anything that I have to give.
Awesome. All right. Well, I hope you all take some time to check out Andrew's company. Thanks so much, Andrew, for coming on the show. We'll see you next time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.